Good morning, Council. Today is Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. We have six cases on our calendar for today. Four set for oral argument. This is the fourth case. This is A22-1213, Anoka County, Anoka, Minnesota, and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 5, South St. Paul, Minnesota, versus Relator Bureau of Mediation Services. Council, for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. There is a button on the underneath on the podium, the center part there, to raise and lower it. And there's also a timer there, so please make sure that you monitor how much time you have so you stay within your time limits. With that, Council, for appellant, you may proceed. And please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Justin Cummins, appearing on behalf of Relator AFSCME Council 5. Your Honors, this case concerns the Bureau of Mediation Services' determination that employees working in the county libraries, Anoka County libraries, do not constitute an appropriate unit. The court heard oral argument last week in a closely related case. That case involved a different union, LELS, but the same employer. And so the court has important context, and I acknowledge that, and I will tailor my comments accordingly.
Don't tailor them too much, because yeah. I wasn't a member of that panel.
Fair enough, Your Honor. In short, the court here should reverse the Bureau's determination for three independently sufficient reasons. The first reason is that the decision reflects legal error. The second reason is that the decision is not supported by the record, and the third reason is that it's arbitrary and capricious. I'll address those in order. Regarding legal error.
Were those all the same issues raised in that prior appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. The PELRA requires, quote, that BMS shall place particular importance on the history and extent of organization and the desires of the petitioning employee representatives when considering the petition at issue. BMS committed a legal error because it simply did not do what the PELRA requires. For starters, the PELRA states, it really codifies a public policy here. It states that we should secure, quote, orderly and constructive labor relations, unquote. Moreover, BMS acknowledged in its order triggering this appeal that a broad bargaining unit would not lead to stable and constructive labor relations, unquote. Yet BMS still determined that the only appropriate bargaining unit here is the broadest one possible, cutting across the entire county, all technical and clerical positions, including hundreds of additional employees in the bargaining unit. In addition to ordering a bargaining unit that contravenes the public policy codified by the PELRA, BMS impermissibly makes a viable or realistic election impossible, or at least unrealistic. BMS did so by increasing substantially the size of the bargaining unit.
Aren't we rather limited by our standard of review in this situation?
In what sense, Your Honor?
Well, for you to succeed, you need to demonstrate, do you not, that the agency was arbitrary?
That is one grounds, Your Honor, yes. But if the decision reflects legal error, that is a separate, independently sufficient basis for reversal.
All right. So you want to talk about the legal error?
Yes. And I am, Your Honor. And so the first way that the decision reflects legal error is that BMS is ignoring the public policy here. It's the public policy that the PELRA requires in terms of such determinations is to promote orderly and productive labor relations.
How is that a legal error, though? I mean, isn't BMS required to analyze the statutory factor, the statutory factors?
Yes.
And didn't BMS do that?
Well, they purported to, but they didn't really. And there are three factors.
I mean, how can you say they purported to? I mean, it's there in the record in terms of their analysis of those factors, right?
There are three yes, Your Honor. There are three factors that are of particular importance, and the determination here does not give the requisite importance, and in fact applies them erroneously, in our view.
I don't mean to offend you, but it just seems to me that what you're describing doesn't sound to me like legal error. It sounds like a judgment call that the agency is making.
Well, I'll fair enough, Your Honor. I'll dive into that more specifically. So, the three factors that the PELRA says specifically must be given particular importance are organizing viability, the preference of the union, and organizing history.
Didn't the agency identify all three of those?
Yes. Yes. Those are the ones that should be given particular importance. And BMS said as to the organizing history, that actually favors the petition here. And nonetheless found that the petition was not the inappropriate unit. And that's really the fundamental error here, Your Honors.
But doesn't that go to the weight of the weighing of the factors? And we give great deference to the agency in terms of how it weighs the factors. The fact that BMS said, yeah, that does favor the union, I assume you're not challenging that, right?
Not challenging the fact that they found that this particular factor favored the union? No, we're not.
Right. So what you're going to is, I think your argument is that that BMS committed some type of error in the weighing. I'm not sure that that's really a legal error. Isn't that more go to whether its decision either wasn't supported by the record or was arbitrary and capricious rather than the violating a legal standard?
The fundamental legal error here, Your Honor, is that the agency looked at this as if the question is whether this is the most appropriate unit or the appropriate unit as opposed to an appropriate unit. That is the actual legal standard. If it is an appropriate unit, then that the bargaining unit should be certified, should be approved. That's not what happened here. What the court did what the agency did is it compared the unit that was proposed by the relator with the county's position, and in the process elevated its own internal preference for a policy that was not promulgated, not subject to public comment, not ratified by the legislature, and said, we're going to basically elevate this above the explicit statutory factors that the legislature says are of particular importance. The Bureau says...
Do you have any case law in point about how we are supposed to weigh an unpromulgated agency policy versus a statute from the legislature? Because, I mean, obviously it occurs in administrative law a lot, right, where the legislature has a statute, the agency needs to implement the statute, they develop promulgated rules where... I know that there is really clear precedent that we give that the same authority that we give to the statute itself. But how are we supposed to look at something like this, which is a policy that didn't go through the rulemaking process, and how that's weighted versus the statutory factors? Do you know if there's any cases on point that address that?
I don't have any cases on point, Your Honor, but what is clear is that an internal preference is not deserve deference like other administrative actions might, and certainly does not override the explicit statutory factors that the legislature says are mandatory, the ones that are given particular importance and which were cast to the side as the agency was elevating this preference for the four basic units.
But the Bureau, in its conclusion, said Minnesota Statute Section 179A.09 prescribes the commissioner place particular importance upon the history and extent of organization and the desires of the petitioning employee representative. And then it says, the Bureau has noted the particular importance of these factors when it weighed the factors in total. So it seems like the Bureau did, and to my earlier point, I think your argument seems to go to the weighing of them rather than whether or not appropriately applied those factors, including placing the appropriate importance on those particular factors.
Your Honor, as to the weighing here, at addendum 12, where the Bureau is discussing the preference of the union, it actually erroneously frames it as the recommendation of the parties. That's not what the statute says. The statute says the preference of the petitioner, of the employee's representatives, which is in this case relator.
But that's what it does say. It says, and the desires of the petitioning employee representative. It says in the second to last paragraph on addendum 12, first paragraph after conclusion.
What the addendum 12 says in the record speaks for itself, but it says the parties have differing recommendations as to the construction of the appropriate unit. The consideration is neutral. The way we read that is the Bureau is not taking into account and certainly not being guided by the preference of the actual petitioner here, and instead is treating that as equal to the county's position. If I may, and it sounds like the court is more interested in the record and arbitrary and capricious matters, and so I will move to those quickly. Under the requisite de novo review, it's especially clear here that the evidence does not support the Bureau's determination. Our brief addresses this in more detail, and in the interest of time, I'm just going to highlight a few examples. BMS declares that the community of interest factor regarding job classification is neutral. It doesn't favor either side. Rather than favoring the relator, because the library employees who want to be represented by the relator have varying levels of knowledge and educational requirements. That's their rationale. Yet BMS has substantially expanded the unit, adding in hundreds of more employees, hundreds of more positions, et cetera.
Which goes to what I would say is, I guess, maybe the most interesting question to me, which is whether the agency has followed the normal procedure that it applies in this case or whether it's applied a different procedure in this case. You hinted at it a little bit with the difference between evaluating an appropriate unit and the appropriate unit, and whether, in fact, in this case, BMS has done what it has said explicitly it would not do in other cases, which is, it's compared the union that you have proposed with the union that the county has proposed, and by doing that apples to comparison instead of individually looking at the union you have proposed separately, whether they've departed from their past practice. And I mean, maybe you want to comment on that argument.
Yes, Your Honor. That's precisely what I was attempting to say earlier, which is that the fundamental legal error here, the fundamental mistake, is that the BMS is, rather than looking at the unit proposed and asking, is this an appropriate unit, is instead saying to itself, is this the most appropriate unit? And to that end, let's compare the proposed unit with what the county has offered. And by the way, let's also fold in our internal preference for having four basic units. That is not how the analysis is supposed to go.
Well, I guess I wonder on your comments about whether that's violating PERLA, which would be a de novo review, or whether that's that they're applying a different procedure, which I think would be an arbitrary and capricious decision-making question, because it's what they're doing is they're conducting the analysis in a different way, or are you directly tying this to the language in the statute, saying that statutorily they're required to evaluate an appropriate unit versus the appropriate unit?
Yes, they are statutorily required to analyze this through an appropriate lens, and they did not do that. But they also committed, in our view, error in terms of how they were conducting the community of interest analysis.
But in PERLA itself, doesn't PERLA talk about the appropriate unit in the statute? And we have some case law where BMS has said that we've interpreted that to be an, and they've sort of incorporated the standard that's applied federally. Do you think that directly ties to our state statute, making this a de novo question?
The The PELRA is interpreted consistent with federal precedent, and federal precedent is very clear in this regard that it's an appropriate unit, not the appropriate unit. And so the same principle applies here. And that is over time certainly been the governing standard on the PELRA too, in any event. And so by—
Do you have a case site for that principle that in Minnesota we interpret PELRA consistent with federal precedent?
Yes, I don't have the exact pin site. It's International Operating Engineers Local 49, a Supreme Court case from approximately 30 years ago. I don't have the site committed to memory, but yes, there is a Minnesota Supreme Court case that specifically says that precedent under the NLRB, under the NLRA, National Labor Relations Act, as interpreted by the National Labor Relations Board, is highly instructive to the courts in interpreting the PELRA because of the statutory regimes are highly analogous. And the precedent is very clear under federal law that it's an appropriate, not the appropriate unit. I'm about out of time. If I could just make one final point regarding arbitrary and capricious, and that is BMS relied on a factor not intended by the legislature to be factored into this analysis, and that is elevating their internal preference here that was not promulgated for purposes of receiving public comment. It was not ratified by the legislature. They're lifting that up, this preference for having four basic units above these explicit mandatory factors that are stated in the statute as highly important.
To that, counsel, I realize you are out of time, but I'm going to ask one final question on that. And in terms of that factor, the eight community of interest factors, the eighth one is any other relevant factors. So that arguably could fit under factor number eight. And second, BMS relied on a Minnesota Supreme Court case that talked about that preference to consider that as a factor. So it seems like there's support, legal support for considering that factor, correct?
May I address that?
Yes, please.
The two parts. Regarding the case, I believe you're talking about the Minnesota State College Board decision. Yes. And so that pertained to state employees. The situation there very briefly was, the question was whether employees who were at the different campuses around the state could be in separate units. You know, each campus has their own unit, or if it's a statewide unit. That does not apply here. We're not talking about state employees. We're talking about county employees. And there's nothing to suggest that the driving consideration there was over-fragmentation.
Right, but the fact of the matter is BMS has adopted that language, and we have consistently said, you know, that's fine to consider that as a factor.
It's fine to consider that as a factor, but here, a couple things. First is there's no evidence of over-fragmentation, none. And second of all, the fact that there would be this idea that an unspecified factor like overfragmentation, it's not in the statute, could be elevated to override explicit factors that are described explicitly in the statute as deserving of particular importance is arbitrary and capricious.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, for a response, you'll have 15 minutes.
Good morning, my name is Scott Lepak. I'm representing respondent Anoka County in this matter. Before I forget, Judge Larson, you asked about a statutory site relating to the application of our state labor law and its interpretation utilizing the federal National Labor Relations Act. That's outlined in the respondent Anoka County's brief at page 13, footnote 4. And basically, under state law, the state, the bureau, courts, historically, quite frankly, the parties, noted that cases under the National Labor Relations Act, while not controlling, are often instructive. The practical application of that is that federal law is applied when it suits whoever is making the argument, and is often ignored when it does not suit the other's argument. So,
but you don't disagree that under the NLRA, in federal law, they analyze an appropriate unit rather than the appropriate unit.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that, and quite frankly, I think. From the county respondent, Anoka County's perspective, it's important to distinguish why we're here today and what the Bureau did. The Bureau is charged with determining an appropriate bargaining unit. That is a statutory dictate under Minnesota Statute 179A.09. It's right in the consideration of factors. The state labor law does use the appropriate unit. It's at 179A.01. It's right at the beginning, and that may be simply a loose application of policy. But in this case, with the Bureau, the parties, what everyone was looking at was whether there is an appropriate unit in order to meet its statutory mandate under 179A.09. What the parties stipulated to, and the reason that this gets a little blurry after the fact, is that the parties asked the Bureau two questions. The county and the union said, we'll certainly argue about what is an appropriate unit. Is what the union has proposed an appropriate unit? And the Bureau correctly characterized that issue as, with respect to issue one, whether the petition for bargaining unit is an appropriate bargaining unit. They looked at an appropriate bargaining unit. The confusion in this case appears to come from the stipulated issue number two that the parties, the county and the union, put before the Bureau and said, if that's not an appropriate unit, what is the appropriate unit? We asked. You learn, if you don't want to know the answer, don't ask the question. The question was asked. So when the Bureau determines there's an inappropriate petition for bargaining unit with Anoka County's Union of AFSCME looking to organize the library, normally that ends the inquiry. But because the parties said, well, what is the appropriate unit? The Bureau also answered that. That second question is relevant to the parties, not necessarily in the context of applying the statutory factors, but it's important in the context of the fact that Anoka County has got a simultaneous organizing effort going on among clerical technicals in a different part of the county. It was the sheriff's office, and we talked about that.
Was that stipulation in that sheriff's office dispute as well?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Was this stipulation in that sheriff's office dispute as well, which was heard last week?
I represented Anoka County on both of these cases, so I think I can confidently speak. The issues were the same. Whether an appropriate
unit. Was that stipulation
unit,
the same?
Yep, the stipulated questions. We asked two questions in that case as well as this one. So there is a crossover in this.
But I think that the argument that appellant is making, and I can be corrected if I'm wrong, is not with the, you know, what happens in the conclusion section, but the fact that when the agency went through each of the factors, they didn't analyze their proposed union first, and then when the answer was no, move on to analyze those factors as to the union that the county had proposed. And I think that there's an It does appear to me, at least, from the case law, that may be a departure from the way that the agency has conducted these analyses in the past, which, you know, maybe gets into the, is this a change of procedure versus a legal error? But could you comment on that?
Yes, it's an excellent question. In the instance in which the Bureau is looking at an appropriate unit, is this even an appropriate unit? And it says, no, it stops its analysis there. The Bureau does use, this format has been utilized if you look at the record in prior BMS cases. The format is the introduction, the position of the parties, This one includes, because Anoka County is something of a unique entity in terms of labor relations, a significant amount of history, and then gets into a discussion, which is basically from the case last week, prior cases that the Bureau has done involving Anoka County, the medical examiner's office being the one most recent prior to that. There's also an AFSCME case involving the probation officers prior to that. The discussion section of the order is really from application of the statutory provisions. It's how the Bureau shapes its thoughts and applies the statutory procedure, the statutory factors. And the Bureau is required to consider statutory factors to the credit of the appellant. They recognize, we call them eight factors. We broadly call other the eighth factor. Other includes the desires of the petitioning organization, in this case, AFSCME. And when the Bureau analyzes, its statutory duty is to apply these factors. And how it applies these factors is that it simply notes the factor, notes what the evidence says. In this case, it favors the union only on one issue. It favors the broad four basic policy preference, which has been adopted by the county. When the order, the discussion talks about the county's position is simply this longstanding four unit policy preference is the one that should apply. If we look at what is the best unit, and that's our stipulated issue too, it would be that. But the Bureau is applying these statutory factors to try to figure out, is this an inappropriate unit? If you look at the application and the discussion section, the Bureau finds one factor. The history factor supports the union's petition for group.
Why doesn't the preference factor favor the union?
The preference factor, and that's an excellent question. If you look at Minnesota Statute Section 179.809, it lists the eight factors. The listed factor is the recommendation of the parties. The preference of the union, the preference of the petitioning, desires of the petitioning organization, that's to be given the extra weight, the particular importance. The Bureau considers that in the context of considering its other factors. So the statutory provision specifically talks about the recommendation of the parties. Obviously, since the county and the union don't agree.
Doesn't the statute say the petitioning employee representatives and the desires of the petitioning employee representatives?
Yep.
The commissioner shall place particular importance upon the history and the extent of organization and the desires of the petitioning employee representatives. I think that's a statutory directive, not an other directive.
That is, but the Bureau considers it an other. Out of the listed statutory factors, the recommendation of the parties is a statutory factor. It is a little confusing because the statute does say, here's the factors that you need to decide. And if you're digging through the statute, it talks about uniform comprehensive position classification, compensation, profession skill class, occupational classifications, administrative supervisory levels, geographical location, history, extent of organization, the recommendation of the parties.
But couldn't that be interpreted that when the parties disagree that the, you know, weight needs to be given to what the desires are of the petitioning parties as opposed to the any party that's opposing the union?
When the parties are in disagreement, the recommendation of the parties cannot be used against either party. It simply is a neutral. It just simply doesn't apply because the recommendations cancel each other out. From the perspective of looking only at...
Well, doesn't that read out that you put particular weight on the desires of the petitioning employees?
That does read that, and that is a factor that the Bureau recognized and referenced and applied in this case. It specifically notes in its conclusions that it recognized that that was to be given significant weight.
I'm trying to tease out appellant's argument that particular to the analysis under seven, that was somehow arbitrary, is I guess what I'm trying to tease out. And I think that what the appellant's argument is that under seven, when the two conflicted because of the statutory preference, that should have been favorable to as opposed to putting it into other relevant factors. I think that that's the argument appellant is making.
That is, I appreciate that clarification. That does make sense. In applying the statute, so the Bureau historically and what the Bureau did here and what the Bureau does is it takes the factors that are outlined in the statute and it just pulls them apart and starts putting in evidence, observations, conclusions. And because the statute says at the end shall place particular importance upon the history, again, one of the factors that's already listed, and extent of organization, again, one of the other factors that's already listed, and the desires of the petitioning employee representative, that one is then pulled out because it's not part of the first part of the statute, but it is also referenced and recognizes. From a practical perspective, obviously, that factor, that last piece that's given particular importance is a self-answering question. Petitioner would not seek to represent this group absent their desire to represent that group. So it's a factor that's given particular importance by the Bureau. When there's anything close to a tie, or if the factors seem like it's a pretty close call, it's sort of inappropriate, we don't know what to do, that tips the scales easily. If it's a close call, but then you have to apply history, extent of organization, and the preference, then, based on those facts, the Bureau applies its own expertise and says, again, that tips the scales. It can't simply be the only controlling factor in this. These three areas to be given particular importance can't be the only controlling factors. That would make consideration of the other factors irrelevant.
So you seem to acknowledge that the desires of the petitioning employee representative is going to be a factor that almost always is going to be in favor of the petitioning party, which makes sense. But then it seems like the recommendation of the parties almost always is going to be, there's a conflict, it's going to cancel out. So it's kind of a helpful clarification because, I mean, I saw that as almost the BMS, the Bureau, doing an apples-to-apples comparison versus looking at one versus the other.
That is an excellent observation as well. And I always start out in talking about the state's public sector labor relations, its derivative from the federal. We've developed all these standards, Regal Weep, the state, the Bureau, statutory, regulatory, has developed standards based on, quite frankly, the 1940s. So the factual situation of the 1940s garment workers, those have all been pulled forward to determine what is an appropriate unit. And what is an appropriate unit comes with an overall, as the Bureau characterizes it, and the term is utilized in federal law frequently, is what's the community of interest? And the Bureau recognizes that, and it stated its role much better than I ever could when it says that appropriate unit determinations are one of the most conceptual of all labor relations documents and notes its task as being elusive. So when it puts these ingredients, these eight ingredients, you add three more, which, by the way, were also referenced in here, and you add the desires. What does that stew look like? Well, the measurement to apply is in the Bureau's discretion. And they've been applying this, and in counties, they use the four unit policy preference when we're talking about county governance. They've been using it for 40-some years. And then, obviously, the one we don't talk about in these cases is the Bureau has also got a general stated disfavor for individualized departmental units. Silos tend to result in overfragmentation from the Bureau's perspective. And overall, and again, since 1975, I think, the Bureau has recognized the Minnesota State College Board case, which says, don't do anything that's going to give you overfragmentation. I see my time is up, but thank you.
Thank you, Council. Appreciate it. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I want to briefly revisit the community of interest factors, starting with three that are warranting particular importance First, history. There's no dispute. The Bureau acknowledges that favors relator. Second, extent
I'm
of
sorry, I didn't hear that. That there was what?
The Bureau acknowledges that favors relator.
Okay.
Second is extent of organization, and the third is desires of the petitioning employees, the relator. And there's also no dispute that the third factor favors the relator, although the Bureau views that as essentially neutral.
Now, when the Bureau determines that something favors one party or the other, does that mean that you just total up the favors and you come up to a conclusion, or is there an evaluation process of that favoring?
It is more or less a totality of the factors consideration. It's not like a rigid analysis. So it's taking everything together. And that's really the essence of the community of interest analysis, is to look at everything together. And the community of interest helps to guide that analysis.
And Council, I just want to pause for just a second there to provide some clarification. I don't mean to put words in respondent's mouth, but I understood the desires of the petitioning employee representative to have been kind of teased out of the seventh factor of the recommendation of the parties. The recommendation of the parties, more often than not, is going to be neutral because they're both recommending something else of what is an appropriate unit. But that the desires of the petitioning employer is given basically extra credit or extra weight. It's teased out of that factor and given, you know, that extra weight. So I don't think that the desires of the petitioning employer representatives is considered to be neutral. It in fact is taken out and recognized by the statute, and I think that the Bureau did recognize that in its analysis as well.
Well, we respectfully believe that the practical impact of the Bureau's analysis was not to give the requisite importance to that factor, and certainly the weight in favor of the relator.
And is this because of the concern of overfragmentation?
That's part of it, Your Honor. And I'll address that also. But getting back to the second of the important factors, which is the essentially the viability of an election. What the Bureau did here by substantially increasing the bargaining unit was make the election as not realistic. Not to say that there has to be a guarantee that the union wins the election, but at least have it be realistic. And as the court knows from the case argued last week, there are a lot of employees who want to be represented by a different union. They have no relationship to the employees who want to be represented by AFSCME. They would not make a cohesive unit with shared interests, experiences, et cetera, that would make for stable and productive labor relations, bargaining, and so forth. And so the idea that expanding the unit by many hundreds to include a substantial group who want to be represented by a law enforcement union is contrary to the principles that underline the community of interest analysis. And I want to address a couple of other of the community of interest analysis factors as well to underscore the point that the decision here was arbitrary and capricious and reflects legal error, and it's not supported by the record. The job classification factor, which the Bureau describes as neutral rather than favoring relator, and the basis for this determination is that, well, you know, there's some variation here in the positions, the educational requirements, and so forth among the folks that work in the libraries. But by that logic, it would be even more the case if you're going to expand well beyond the library and go across the county, including dozens of additional positions with different qualifications, different educational requirements, and so forth. So the logic of the Bureau's decision militates against their determination of neutrality. It should, in fact, favor the relator's position.
Well, and all of that derives from the fact that the way that the factors have been analyzed is apples to apples, as opposed to separately analyzing the union as has been proposed, and then separately analyzing the union that the county has proposed.
Correct. And I see I'm out of time. May I just briefly address one other factor, Your Honor?
You may.
Thank you. And this is the authority levels and geographic location. Again, the Bureau says, look, there's a variety among the folks that work in the library and or libraries, and so you know they're in different places, and they have different supervisory status or decision-making authority. Okay, fair enough. But if you expand the bargaining unit to include many hundreds more across the county, that logic is even more applicable. So by the Bureau's own logic, this larger unit should not be appropriate. And the Bureau actually concludes that under this logic, these factors favor the county or favor the determination that we need a wall-to-wall unit. And that's completely contrary to even their own logic. So at the end of the day, Your Honors, the decision here by the Bureau is arbitrary and capricious. It reflects legal error and is not supported by the record. We respectfully request that the decision be reversed.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you both for your, not only for your briefing, but for the discussion today and trying to clarify these issues. We do appreciate that. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. That is the last case for our oral calendar. The court is now in recess to consider the non-oral calendar. Thank you both.